Hello again, Dwayne Drummond here with Allie Alberigo, SeaRunnerTalk.com. Allie, how you feeling today?
I'm doing awesome, Dwayne. I'm just coming off of a super busy weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So I'm back on Monday, excited to, keep on going and, be on the phone with you. So that's cool. Hope all the listeners are happy to hear from us again and be on the phone with us or on the call with us or on the recording with us, whatever we call it.
Yeah, on the podcast. So, and just to remind everybody, you can, subscribe to the podcast by going to iTunes. And we do have some information on the website. If you do not have an Apple product and you still want to subscribe, there's some ways that you can do that. And that's all at SeaRunnerTalk.com so that you can get updates when we have, our calls. So, Allie, today I know that we wanted to talk about, how some people call it a black belt testing or a black belt extravaganza or what have you. But you guys, you just came off of a very big weekend, like you said, and it had to do with your black belts. So let's dive into, that conversation about black belts.
Well, it's interesting because a good friend of mine, he's in PA, his name is Brett Dunlop, and he saw the photos of my black belt test. And in one photo, we have 25 of us that are all my black belts just in one picture. And he's like, wow. He goes, you're truly a black belt school. So, Brett, thanks for inspiring this conversation. And he said, you should do a podcast on this. So he's always got great ideas. So if you're listening, Brett, thanks so much for this. And, I had a great weekend in our school. We, it's not easy to become a black belt. It's a minimum of 5 years, and that's if you're the perfect student and you come to every class and you've never missed, But on average, it takes about 7 years to become a black belt in my school. The kids and adults who've been training who just did their black belt test, they actually have a range of anywhere from 7 to 12 years of training before they test for their black belt, which, as you know, Dwayne, it's hard to keep people past 2 years. So it's a real great accomplishment when you're able to do that and you have this group of people that continue on and move forward.
Yeah, it's always funny to see, I get my black belt and then I quit. And you never really trained as a black belt then. So it's sad.
Yeah.
And I know it's a stopping point for some, but, the question is, how do you change that? How do you change the idea of your students, knowing that, black belt really isn't the end, but it really is the beginning or the next beginning?
Yeah, and so there are a lot of schools out there that, they have signs on the wall, we're a black belt school, they have black belt club, they have black belt everything, yet they don't have many black belts. And a long time ago, one of my friends actually stirred up, thinking in my life and got me to change my perspective because he's like, he said to you, are you a black belt school? He said that to me, and I'm like, yeah, we're a black belt school. He goes, how many black belts do you have? And at the time, we were only open for like 5 or 6 years, and I said, well, none. He's like, well, then you're not a black belt school, are you? You may have the black belt spirit or the black belt attitude. And then he said, what if you were a college and your college, let's say like Harvard or UCLA or Penn State, and their graduation rate was zero? He says, do you think many people would go to that college? He said, do you think many people would rate that college as one of the top colleges in the state or country, because they're not succeeding at what they promised. They're calling themselves Ivy League school, yet no one is graduating. I mean, that's not the case, obviously, but I'm saying if we looked at ourselves like that, so we look at our black belts and we say, how many do we actually have? How many are we promoting? And I don't mean just giving black belts out. I mean actual quality martial artists that have transformed their lives. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, it does, and that person changed your paradigm, right? Or what did you call it before?
Yeah, unless people understand from our last call, my paradigm changed entirely, right? listen, if you don't understand what we're talking about, go back to our last call so you can understand. And this is a good way to get you to go listen to a different call. But and that was really interesting to me because I thought about it and I said, okay. And here's the thing too, I look at it sometimes in our graduation rates through the ranks as well. And I say, well, how good are we at graduating beginners in my school? Because they start off as a beginner, then they earn their white belt. But in most other schools, they get their white belt, and now they're white belts. How good are we at graduating to yellow belt, if that's our next belt, and green? And then we wonder, too, like, of course, in the, you know, the martial arts themselves, if we say to ourselves, well, what is our graduation rate? And, you know, let's say we got 20 brand new beginners, and we, you know, they started off in, you know, in our program, but only six of them moved on to the next belt, right? So if we look at retention sometimes, I think it's important for us to look at those numbers, because it's not just who renewed at the end of the year. We want to look at where our holes are and what we're doing well in between, and, you know, where's the biggest hole? Maybe it, and at my school, it was purple belt. And, you know, where they were getting to the point where they've been with me 3-4 years, they were getting bored. We actually had this really difficult kata, bow kata, which is frustrating. So they were frustrated, they were bored, and then they were dropping off like flies. And then, you know, of course, if they dropped off, then our next rank was very small, which was our brown belt level. So we had a very small amount of black belts graduating. So I basically, without going into detail, really analyzed all that and changed what I did, and eventually changed how many people now graduated to brown and now graduated to purple and then eventually to black. So I had to look at that and really analyze where the holes were.
Yeah, and I want the listeners to, you know, really listen to what you said with regards to creating a atmosphere of not only having that black belt attitude and spirit, but creating black belts, but even taking it a step further and understanding why individuals weren't getting there and making, you know, just something that actually was something that they could pass, something that they could achieve and actually feel good about it and then move forward. And it's not like you dumbed it down or you took things away. You just kind of reorganized it. But you what you didn't do is that, you know, you didn't ignore the signs. You knew what the stats were. If you didn't, that made you go find out what the stats were,
right.
You know, with regards to the dropout rate and not only just the dropout rate, but what belts people were dropping out at. Because I know as us as school owners, we see, okay, yeah, we have this percentage of a dropout rate, but we don't really actually drill down and know exactly what's happening, meaning where the dropouts are more frequent, and then we need to go back and take a look at the curriculum or take a look at the instructors or take a look at whatever's happening at that level or levels and see if, you know, that's the actual problem and then that it's not the student. It's kind of like when I tell my instructors, you know, don't get frustrated if the student doesn't get it, and don't look at the student as if they are stupid or treat them that way, because
right.
It just will make you a better instructor if you just kind of investigate it and see maybe why they're not getting it, or, you know, you presented it orally, now you got to do it visually, or you presented it visually, now you need to do it orally, or you know, kinesthetically, or just so you have to investigate and figure it out, and it makes you a better instructor there. And what you're talking about, it makes you a better school owner to actually dive in and figure out what the problem or problems are.
Yeah, and you know what? You and I, Dwayne, are a little bit weird compared to other instructors. And let me clarify what I mean is that we enjoy statistics. We enjoy analyzing data and then coming up with a solution. Not a lot of instructors do that, and they don't enjoy it. And I get it, because it's, you know, it's boring, it's mundane, and it also works very much against the ego. In other words, like, you know, I used to say, well, hey, listen, if they can't handle it, that's tough crap, man. Then they weren't meant to be students in my school. And, you know, I have a whole other story at a friend of mine who asked that question to me, and I got mad at him. You know, he's like, are you helping people or hurting people? And then once I let go of the ego and I realized I was hurting people rather than helping people, right? You know, so anyway, long story short is that, you know, looking at the data and finding the problems is important. You would think that they would do that in our school systems, right? And they would look at kids' motivation and excitement. And very often, like, I'll give you an example. In my daughter's school, what she's going to be 16 this year, but anywhere from 14 years old to she's in high school till, you know, she graduates, teenagers are at the point where they need the most amount of sleep. in my school district, they make the kids, the little kids, go into school 8, 9 o'clock, and they make the other kids, the teenagers and the youth and the tweens, go into school at like 7 o'clock. And it's totally against the human nature of when the kids, teenagers, need more sleep, and they're, you know, if they sleep more, they learn more. And they don't look at these things and say, well, this makes more sense for the kids. They just say, okay, 7 o'clock is the class, let's do it. And we do that quite often. We say, okay, this is our curriculum, and they're going to learn it, and that's the way it's going to go. And we don't analyze our stuff as well, so that we come up with something that's beneficial to the student. We promote more people that way. And of course, obviously, if it's more beneficial to the student and they stay and we retain more students, it's more beneficial to the dojo and then the art at whole, right?
Yeah, and I always, I guess I tell the parents, you know, I'm in it for the long haul, and I basically view your child as clay or stone, where I'm just going to chisel a little bit away at a time until we get them where we want them to be. And at some points in some of their training seasons, I can chisel off more than others. And that's just the way it is. And everybody's different. But you have to make a curriculum that can fit and be flexible with all of that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, oh, absolutely, without a doubt. And I liked an old friend of mine who I haven't talked to in many, many years. We used to have some great conversations back in the day at different conventions. His name is Randy Holman. And I remember speaking to him at one point, 10 years ago even. And his program was set up where he had someone who was in charge of white belts. And their job was to promote them to yellow. And he based their success ratio on how many people actually stayed with the program and got promoted. And he based that their success as an instructor was on how well he communicated with the students, communicated with the parents, and he moved them through. And then once he did it, similar to like a first grade teacher teaches those kids all year and slides them through to second grade in public school. However, if kids are quitting school at second grade, if it was even allowed or possible, they would say to that teacher, you're not doing your job very well. You're not only not teaching them, but they're quitting. So, if the job was based on successes, not just test grades, or it's based on, moving through the ranks, we'd have a different perspective and we'd look at it differently. Because when I analyze schools, there are many holes within the bucket that I'm able to uncover when we just look at the data. And we're able to say, there's a problem. It's obvious. You people are quitting at your white belt level to your yellow belt level. There's an issue there. It's not just, it could be contract time. It could be, the material, the curriculum, et cetera, but we do have to look deeper to figure out what's going on and what's wrong.
So what else are you doing that you do now, to not only get people to go to black belt, but then to even go to second degree, third degree, and beyond?
Yeah, you know what? What's interesting first is, one, I had to realize that I needed to invest more time in their preparation, because a lot of it was that their fear of failure, their fear of physical lack of ability, whether it be technique or actual, because we have a pretty physical test. And not only on the day of the physical martial art test, but we actually do a physical, which is running. They have to do 4-mile run. Dwayne, you'll appreciate this because you're a runner. I had one student who ran 4 miles. He ran 6-minute miles every mile.
Wow.
That's pretty crazy,
that's
right?
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty impressive. 6 minutes. I mean, I read stories that the 8-minute mile back in the day was unheard of. And then when some runner did it, people were like, oh, wow, it's possible. And then people started running the 8-minute mile. But this guy was in such good physical shape. He ran 6:10, somewhere around there, but 6-minute miles. It was crazy. And then we do 1,000 jumping jacks, 1,000 with our arms, without our arms. We do push-ups, bleacher runs up and down. It's a good 2-hour physical grueling test, 100-yard wind sprints. 5 of them across the thing. Then at the end, we do a whole football field of physical army crawls from one side to the end. And once they reach there, I'm on the sideline and I do my congratulations speech. And then we go and we actually do the very next day our physical test. So it's pretty grueling. But anyway, back to that. There were days when I would do a test and I would just say, okay, John Smith, you're testing in 2 months. See you there. And that was it. I'd leave it entirely up to them. And then they'd test. Some would do amazing. Some would do okay. Then I changed that to a 10-week success cycle, and people, I realized that people physically were just not, 10 weeks is not enough to evolve your personal health and your physical ability. So, but I'd have people that did the test on sheer will alone. They got through the physical. I've had girls and guys pee their pants because they were so exhausted, but they refused to quit. However, I looked at that as dangerous because I did not want people to get sick. I didn't want an adult to possibly have a heart attack. So I looked at that and I said, wow, what is it going to take for me to transform their lives? So I started this Black Belt Extravaganza 6-month success cycle. And we do, we run with them. They go through this mock physical. We actually, like a dance studio, works to the very end until they get the recital down onto the day of the recital. They've gone through that routine hundreds of times. So at the end, when they perform it, they look amazing. And that's what we do. We prepare them for that. And the entire time for 6 months, I'm working with them mentally to say, listen, just because you get your black belt, because to me, that's nothing more than a glorified brown belt that knows a brown belt material. Now they have to learn black belt material, right?
Right.
So I then, you know, I'm in their head, you know, listen, don't quit, stick with it. Now you're going to get the fun stuff. And we're working on setting goals before they even get their black belt on their official shodan. Because we do a probationary black belt where they have to wait a year and train for a year before they actually get their certification. They get their belt, they get the title, but they don't actually get their certification until they've been training and learning for an entire year. And then we officially award them their official, you know, their certificate. Then they have to retest 2 years later for official shodan, which means they learned all their black belt material. So to me, it's a massive process for them. And so that's why I could say, if you've made it to black belt in my school, you might not be the toughest fighter in the world. You might not be deadly, you know, in the street, but you're definitely an incredible martial artist and an incredibly dedicated student. That's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love how, you know, you went back and created something that, you know, basically gave them the success things that they needed when they needed it, and didn't just expect them to do it themselves. You actually fed them. I mean, they had to actually, you know, take it and chew it up and swallow it. But you're like, okay, here is this, you know, here is this, and they had to go and do it. And you just made sure that there was no way that they would not be able to do it, except for them just saying, I'm not going to do it. I mean, I love that.
Yeah, and I've had people that have quit like 2 weeks before because their mind beat them, you know, and they got nervous and they got scared. And believe it or not, the parents allowed it. I've had parents said, are you kidding me? This kid is 2 weeks away and, he doesn't really, he's really not into it. I'm like, are you really that afraid? Just like your kids are that afraid to do this test? Are you afraid of them failing? Are you not understanding that they're 2 weeks away? They're going to resent you for the rest of your life. And I've had parents say, well, he doesn't want to do it. I'm like, okay, if that's what you choose, then you're certainly not what I would want as a black belt in my studio. You know, so to me, I mean, it's quite shocking where, you know, where this happens. But, you know, the thing that I had to look at and I had to say, okay, how do I get people to train? And by the way, I'm not the best at this because I have a friend who's 10 times better than me. And I've talked about him a million times. His name is Soke John Oschlager. And he's got like about 150 active training black belts from first degree to like eighth degree in his school. I mean, but the one secret that I've learned from him, or it's not really a secret, but the one tip I've learned from him is that he maintains his students no matter what dan level, what first, second, third degree they are on up to eighth. He's maintained them as if they were students. They were white belts. He never, ever just puts them out on their own. And I, to my own demise, I fail about this too. I do not, you know, watch my black belts as closely as I should. I want to. I teach every Wednesday night black belt class. Not all of them show up. I kind of just say, ah, it's a shame. I should be on top of them more. I should be setting goals with them more. I should say, you know what, in 2 years, you're going to be a second degree. Or in 6 months or 8 months, if you do this X, Y, and Z, you're going to attain your black belt. Or your official black belt, I mean. Or your first degree. You know, and that's something that needs to be done. He says you should treat your students as if they were all white belts. You have to guide them no matter what degree and how long they've been training with you.
Yeah. No, you do. I agree with that. And I don't know that I'm the best at that either. So,
You know, I come from the old mentality where my teacher was like, you get your black belt and that's it. You're on your own. And that's really not the way I want to be, but at times I find that old mentality creeping in. I want my black belts to show they care. I want them to stick around because they want to be there. I want them to dedicate themselves to the dojo and help teach and come to all our events. However, it doesn't always happen. And then I just had a girl so super disappointed in the parents. And, you know, and I can't even blame the kid because the parents need to step in at this point. She's phenomenal. She's been with me since she's 5. She's one of my top grapplers. She's a great, I mean, she beats all the guys up. She's amazing. And I just heard they're not renewing because they're busy with other things. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, don't do one other thing and put the dojo in place of that. Because, she, you know, now she's young. She's like 14 or 15 years old, been training with me since she's 3. If you keep her going now over the next 2 or 3 years, the most valuable lessons are going to be learned because when she was a baby, she didn't understand at the level she's going to learn it now. And if you right. do this, you're going to develop her into the most incredibly unstoppable, most powerful woman that there ever will be. And God forbid she has to defend herself, because in this crazy world, I mean, guys are out there beating up girls, I mean, in street fights as if they were guys, you know, like we never, you and I would never do that, but it was unheard of when I was raised. You'd never hit a girl, no matter what they did. Even if they hit you, you wouldn't hit them. Yet now, guys just say, oh, what'd you say? And they'll walk up to him and pummel him to the ground, take him down top mount and like ground and pound on a female. So to me, the world is becoming more and more dangerous. So I'm shocked at this parent. And you know what? The really thing, and I wrote about this on my Facebook page just this morning. The funny thing is they didn't even call me or stop in or send me a note or email me or Facebook me. They just ignored the renewal and, you know, said, I think we're not going to continue. And that's the way they left. There was out of, you know, we're talking 10 years of me teaching their kids, not even, you know, that exit interview respect level. I had other two black belts that are going off to college, and they came in and they sat with me and there were tears and hugs and we're going to miss you and you've changed our lives. And it was done the right way. Yet this yeah. one didn't do it. I mean, and you know what? I understand it's hard because it's hard to do that, to say goodbye. It's hard to just to walk away the right way. But anyway, it's a tough job that we have, especially when we get people that have been in our lives for that long. I mean, we're talking 10, 12 years.
Yeah, I know one of the things that we did to, you know, continue the black belt process to get, you know, obviously first degrees to move to second degrees and third degrees and on forward is, you know, we have quarterly curriculum cycles, and,
right.
you know, so in the summertime, that's where we're at right now. We have the traditional material where they're going to learn their new form or forms. But then we also, we do Muay Thai stand-up mm-hmm. with them in this curriculum cycle.
Right.
And then in the fall, we do a set of self-defense and also guns, I believe. Where they're,
right.
you know, doing gun defenses. And each level, you know, whether it's first degree, second degree, third degree, what have you, they have their different ones that they
right.
That they
right.
learn, whether it's an add-on or what have you. And then
right.
in the winter, so December, January, and February, we do grappling. So that's that for those 3 months, we're just working on, you know, ground techniques and then takedown defenses. And then let me back up. Back in the summertime, we're doing takedowns along with the Muay Thai. Just
right.
then, you know, the winter and the summer actually are great because that's the crossover between the takedowns and the takedown defenses. Mm-hmm. And then in the spring, we do a different set of self-defense and knives. And then, again, each level has their different cycles that they go through. But that way, it's not necessarily like what they did up to their black belt where everything or most of everything is stacked upon each other. You know, I mean, there's some things that rotate, but in this instance, they're immersed into something for 3 months and then it changes,
right.
which I kind of like because it's even fresh for the instructors as well as the students.
Right. Yeah, and you know what's interesting? I mean, of course, the mindset, of course, for my students is, okay, you've gotten your black belt. Now let's master the white belt techniques while learning your next level. You know, and of course, everyone just wants to, you know, eat the next food that tastes better, is the new technique, the new curriculum, and forget about mastery of the old. We force them to do that. However, that's where sometimes it becomes trying because, you know, how many thousands of times can you do one move, before you get bored with it? However, we try to instill in them that that's where mastery comes from. Anyway, long story short, I think, too, in my style, the cool stuff starts at Shodan, first degree black belt and up, where they start learning defense against sword and some really truly, and again, it's my system, the ninjutsu techniques, you know, the real esoteric cool things, the spear and naginata, the sword and bow and, you know, a shuriken throwing and all of this crazy stuff that they get to learn that and defense against it. And it's just really amazingly cool techniques. So, I mean, when people see it, they got to witness our third degree level on Sunday, and people were in awe. They're like, that stuff is so cool, man. I can't wait to learn that. And, you know, so that's where I agree with you. You have to have diversity. You can't just – there's some schools you train and you get to your black belt and you learn one kata. And then you train and you get to your second and you learn another. It has to be interesting or else people are going to just disappear on you.
Yeah, and I think it's important, like what you're saying, is to have it visible so that the other ranks can see it and aspire to it. I think that's important. So I know that we're, you know, getting close on time here, but any bullet points for us?
There are so many that I think eventually I'm going to package my black belt success cycle and sell it because it is so detailed. And by the way, I never even realized this until it happened. And it was, you know, it was a totally different paradigm in my life, you know, where I never realized that there was life after black belt. You know what I mean? Like, we always focus on beginner, white, yellow, green, blue, purple, brown, and we want to get them the black, and then we just go right back to focusing on the students and getting them the black. But I didn't realize that there was a whole entire income stream at the black belt level for testing and black belt success cycles. I didn't realize that first degree, second degree, and third degree was a whole entire thing for the business side. You know, so there's a whole nother realm of it business-wise that's important, too, but also, too, to keep those students around because that perpetuates instructors. It grows, you know, those people then become your next upcoming teachers. They open dojos, they run programs, they come and teach for you when you don't feel well or take over classes for you. So that's so important, and we don't focus enough on that. And if we don't, we are losing. You know, we're missing out on so much. So that's important. I think maybe we could do a whole nother call on the layout of it. And I would love to get my friend on the phone, and maybe we could interview him on what he does. It's an interesting dynamic, really, that whole black belt tier. But for me, you know, it's something that also is a magical time. I mean, the test was awesome yesterday. You walk away inspired. You walk away with a sense of accomplishment because, after all, right, Dwayne, you and I, we do this because we want black belts. We want to teach people so that they get to a certain level of, you know, accomplishment so that we could say, hey, we did our job. We're doing well.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the effect that it has on their life is just priceless.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Exactly, without a doubt. Cool. So, I mean, in closing with this whole black belt success cycle, to me, the top thing that people should know is, one, give them a good understanding, good visual picture of what the future looks like. Even at, like, purple belt level, if your belt level or the three levels before black, start painting a good, clear picture for them so that they understand it and they're able to envision themselves doing it. And then slowly monitor them and stay on top of them as if they were white belts, and we want to send them We Miss You letters and set goals with them and you know, really, really monitor and maintain their training so that they do reach the next milestone. And then from then, the next milestone and so on. And another thing, too, is, you know, with the black belt success cycle, is put together a program that's going to prepare them for success as best as you possibly can. The only thing that they could do to fail would be not show up that. And last but not least is, you know, with black belts, don't forget that they're nothing more than grown-up white belts. You know, they're teenagers in the martial arts. They're not adults. So don't treat them as if they know better and as if they, you know, not treating them like they're children, but treat them as if they don't know the next thing around the corner. They're there with you because they need guidance from you and your expertise. And we have to share that with them and make sure that they're, you know, they're on track, or else we are dropping the ball. And that's how we do not become black belt schools. Does that sound good?
Nope, sounds perfect. And I want everyone to do us a favor. Allie and I do this call or these School Owner Talk calls for free, and we do that because we want all schools, I mean all good schools, and I mean that they're being run for the right reasons, you know, we want them to succeed, and not only succeed, but they should get paid well and prosper with doing what they're doing. And we have an important role in our communities, and so we want you to share this with other school owners. So, you know, please like our page, you know, forward the information to another school owner or another couple of school owners so that they can, you know, they can pick up on the information that you're learning as well. And it not only helps you, it helps in your community, it helps all the other schools and the students that are going to be in their community as well. So, Allie, thank you very much for sharing, you know, your process with us with your Black Belt Success Cycle.
Yeah, no problem. And thanks for being on the call with me, as always.
All right, everyone, have a great day, and get to work. Share this with everyone.